It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with the microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the sensible football podcast. We are finally back from the Italian heartbreak-induced hiatus.
I'm still wearing black and mourning.
Vishal. So, for listeners back home, Vishal is in an all-black t-shirt. Quite befitting the somber mood of what we've been dealing with for the last 3 weeks. Not that we have not been following football, but that has been quite some time to take. Vishal, it's been a tough week, or yep. Tough couple of weeks. Not just because Italy got knocked out,
yep.
It was followed by the tragic news that Malcolm Young had passed away, one of our favorite musicians from one of our favorite bands.
Yep, the reason I picked up the guitar.
So, all of that came to a head, but nonetheless, the show must go on, as Freddie Mercury said, so we are back. And, Vishal, we will dive into the week's action and look forward.
Yep.
But before that, a quick reminder to everybody that since Soccer Sense interviewed Mark Ring from Brighton & Hove Albion, that was back in the middle of October, just before their game against Everton, the Seagulls have not lost a single Premier League game.
I hope that stops this weekend, by the way.
Which is great until
it's
you
not,
consider
I'm not friends
Vishal
with this man anymore.
That they are taking on Manchester United this weekend. And if Manchester United's record against newly promoted sides this season is anything to go by. Okay, we'll not go there anyway, but
I'm just coming out of mourning. Like.
Alright, but nonetheless, speaking of newly promoted sides, you should take heart from the fact that Vishal, Manchester United 4 Newcastle 1. They look like a side that meant business in that second half after they went a goal down.
Yep.
Dominant win. Again, admittedly, not the strongest of opponents, but then again, Newcastle have sprung some surprises.
It was important to put away the fixture, as in you could have easily. The good point about that fixture was even though they went a goal down, they did not panic. They took their time to come back into the game. They asserted themselves well and they took complete control. So it was a good performance. It was almost an angry performance where they wanted to put in the goals and wanted to make a point that don't rule us out yet. So it was a good performance, especially with the likes of Pogba coming back, Zlatan coming back, Rojo coming back, Luke Shaw back on the bench. I think our squad has just gotten much better and much deeper now. So especially entering the Christmas period where injuries are bound to happen. So looks good, looks positive.
All right. And speaking of the results this weekend, I mean, a lot of them were, you know, results as if the teams were partying like it's 1999, because there's a lot of throwback results. Business as usual for most of the fixtures, but the one fixture where it was business as usual if this were 1999, but surprised a lot of people, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about that. Arsenal 2, Tottenham 0.
Yep.
The North London Derby belongs to Arsenal again.
Yep.
Hashtag COYT. So Vishal, quickly, how did Arsenal, we can't say they got their mojo back, but for at least this fixture, it's important for Arsenal fans that they needed to make a statement, and they made a rather good one.
Yeah, a very strong performance by Arsenal. Because at a basic level, Arsenal from minute one played like they wanted this a lot more than Tottenham. And let's be real, Tottenham, if they really, really need to be successful, they need to start turning up. As in now, United have beaten them this season, Arsenal have beaten them this season. While you have beaten a Liverpool, I agree, but at this point...
There was a game where Liverpool are probably subpar.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I think a Liverpool at its best would still be a very, very tough game for Tottenham Hotspurs. And that game, Dele Alli did not turn up again. Harry Kane, who seemed like he was playing with an injury. So Tottenham's players cannot, and that's what the big time comes with. You cannot pick and choose which games you're going to turn up and which games you're not going to turn up. If an Arsenal are coming at you physically, Arsenal are coming at you or in your face, you need to go back at them, or you need to figure out how you retaliate, because Tottenham did not have an answer. While Tottenham went back to the same old blaming the referee for the decision, but even if one decision was off, or if there was marginally off, it didn't matter. Arsenal should have won that
this
game.
This was a referee
who
the Arsenal fans almost petitioned not to have this game.
Yeah. And Arsenal were going to win that game no matter what, and I think it was a very, very good Arsenal performance. It was refreshing to watch it, and it was refreshing to watch Wenger make the right decision of playing Lacazette, Ozil and Sanchez, because Ozil was immense that game. And I hope Wenger was watching, because when you let Ozil play his role, which is right behind the striker, and just focus on offense, he is that good. Yeah, you ask him to defend and fall back, he is not going to do that. And I think there were a lot of lessons for Wenger himself in this game in terms of how he needs to play this season. And if Arsenal continues playing this way, they will have... I don't know if they will be able to hold on to Sanchez and Ozil in come January, because both of them seem to be on their way out, because they do not want to lose them for free in the summer, and both of them are not close to signing a contract. But yeah, that was a very, very good Arsenal performance. But we know that it's not going to be consistent, because it is Arsenal. Like, we can put money on that. Spurs need to look at themselves. While they did come back in midweek and beat Dortmund, but that's a Dortmund side who everybody's beating right now. So yeah, Spurs really need to, you know, play 38 games in a season to win a trophy or stand a chance of winning a trophy.
All right, and speaking of consistency, speaking of turning up for the big time, and speaking of playing 38 games through the season, Manchester City. We have to address that particular team and the elephant in the room that has been the absolute, let's say, the streak in terms of how they have come out this season, and they have almost looked absolutely invincible.
Yep.
Only a marginal fraction of it you could attribute to, let's say, a little bit of luck or fixtures here and there, but broadly they have got there.
Yep.
On talent.
And how? The thing about Man City that scares me is the level of how clinical they are, right? Like, for example, in the previous game, the minute the opponents hit the post, Man City scored. The next move was a goal, where Man City said,
yes,
okay,
Leicester won, Man City won. They were just leading by
just
one goal at that point.
Yes, there was a decision where company should have been sent off or not, but it doesn't matter. By then, Man City were comfortable in the game. Man City were in the
game.
Yes,
this was... So, the result we are talking about is Leicester City 0, Man City 2. But then it could easily have been Man City 8.
And it's that. It's Man City is now not just a well-managed team, they're a well-coached team. And every player who's normally, it's like what they used to say about Alex Ferguson, right? He could make a 5-on-10 player play like an 8-on-10 player. And that's exactly what's happening, where Fabian Delph, who's been a central midfielder all his life and a decent central midfielder, came in as a backup, is suddenly playing as left back because Mendy got injured, and he is putting performances that are unimaginable like 6 months back. Sterling is consistent all of a sudden. He's scoring goals, he's setting up goals, and of course Kevin De Bruyne, possibly the hottest player in Europe right now, and yes, currently I rate him above Lionel Messi as well in terms of sheer form.
And I mean, in terms of the left foot strike in the last game as well.
Yeah, he scored four goals with his left foot in the last four games, and he's right footed, for Christ's sake. So
yes, he's overtaking Messi's left foot also.
So the entire team is so clear on what their role is. I still think they have very, very visible weaknesses, which a top team has not aimed at targeting, simply because they seem to be overwhelmed and intimidated by Manchester City, and they're preparing not to concede four goals and five goals against Manchester City. So they have a mental edge over whoever they're going into, and the confidence, just the sheer confidence, as in I do not know how else to put it, but just the sheer confidence of all the players in there.
And let's talk a little bit about Pep Guardiola here, because we were discussing a little while earlier that
yep.
Guardiola has both his critics as well as those who are absolute
yep.
Fans and apologists, but let's face it here, he's made pretty humongous difference to this side, and there is no way you can deny that.
I've always been the one who's on the fence about Guardiola. I could never commit to him being great, or I could never commit to him being a bad manager. I always thought this would be his ultimate test in terms of how would he adapt to the English game, because it is far more different than any other league out there, because there are 20 teams who can beat you on any given day of the year. And that's the difference in the English Premier League. And last year he did face it, right? Because he thought when he came in that he did have a team to win the league, but suddenly he saw the realities of the Premier League, and that's the impressive part. He started preparing for this league from game 10 of last season. From game 10 of last season, he said next season will be my season, where you will see them. He pretty much decided what he wanted, and he started working towards that. And if you see what has happened is a large chunk of the players who he's retained were being coached from last year to play this way. And then he's brought in the players who he thought were essential to fit into the system, and he has been playing them, and all of them have been playing to the T. And the difference between Guardiola and the rest of the managers in the Premier League right now is Guardiola himself is a coach. And he's coaching the players in terms of how they should be playing and how they should not be
playing.
Yes,
so this is a key element that you bring in, the difference between coaching and
managing yeah.
or how much of an overlap is there between these two Venn diagrams.
Yeah.
And here is somebody who's almost perfectly suited to that role because of the school of thought he comes from.
Yeah, and I'll draw a parallel, right? Jose Mourinho, great, great manager, good coach, and he's been coaching for a good amount of time. And his tactics of using defense as a weapon, I wouldn't say it's parking the bus is not a negative thing, because he used defense as a weapon to win, a weapon to succeed. It was relevant. It is still relevant against most teams. But what you don't realize about a Guardiola is he is flexible. He is almost fluidic in his approach. He does not have a fixed system. A Manchester United or different Man City will play against, for example, an Arsenal or against a Liverpool. Each time the players might be the same, but the roles that the player fulfills becomes completely different in each game. And that's what coaching does, where you cannot predict what this man is going to set up. He's going to look at the team, he's going to look at your footage, he's going to look at your past performance and say, okay, this is how we are going to shape up against Manchester United. And which is why if you do not coach for if you do not coach your players to cope with Manchester City, and if you just to coach your team to sit back against Manchester City, they're going to thrash you. They're
going to
absolutely come and thrash you and have fun and laugh at you.
We did see that sort of happened with Chelsea, that has happened with Arsenal, and we'll see how that goes for the big games, but for now they seem an unstoppable force. And
definitely,
like we were discussing earlier, Vishal, I mean, what else do you expect of a man who has gone ahead and played some casual chess with Gary Kasparov, of all people?
Yep.
He was in New York.
Man.
So there is your thinking man's manager. During the managerial sabbatical, that's what he did. He played chess with
nobody.
Gary Kasparov.
Yep.
All right. And finally, that brings us towards the end of this week's podcast, but there is just about enough time left, Vishal, to preview the big game coming this week. And this is a big game because both of these teams, it's extremely crucial for them, for their position up there in the top four.
Yep.
Because like we're saying, the league almost seems to be more or less over.
Yep.
And that game we're talking about is Liverpool v Chelsea.
Yep.
Klopp versus Conte.
Yep.
Liverpool midweek blew a 3-3 goal lead post half time, one goal conceded in injury time, made their Champions League chances still uncertain because they have to get a result out of the last game to make that happen. But that aside, Vishal, a big game for Liverpool. They have won 3 on the trot, scored 3 goals there, did not concede, so they have not done too badly. But those are fixtures that happen.
Yeah. And the same case being with both. Chelsea off the Man City defeat have won all the games, and one of them including beating Manchester United. So both the teams on league form have their swagger back, have their confidence back, and Chelsea more looked very clinical, as in their performance against West Brom, which was almost intimidating, where Hazard was just looking to get, like, he's officially hitting 100% after his injury and after his comeback with Morata tying up well with him. So that's a dangerous sign as well. And with Liverpool's defense, I do not know how that they're going to cope with that pace and that speed and strength coming at them. But at the same time, Chelsea themselves are not a very quick team and are generally struggle against pace, and to unleash Salah and Mane against them is, and Coutinho playing right behind them, feeding them, is also a great prospect. So if both the team,
the irresistible attack again of Liverpool becoming the most important point there.
Yep. The one thing that you know is both these teams are not going to be sitting back and defending, because one team can't defend.
and the other team doesn't always like to take it forward. And the point that you made a little while earlier as well, that this is a proper six-pointer for that position in the table. That those positions from 2 through 5.
It's completely open right now. And the thing is, if you drop points now, there's an Arsenal waiting.
There's a Tottenham.
Right? There's a Tottenham who are currently above you, so you're making their lives a little easy. And an Arsenal who are looking to catch up with you. So this is a very, very tricky weekend for Liverpool and Chelsea, because both of them cannot afford to lose these drop these points, because they've unnecessarily dropped points before. And
especially against opponents that probably should not have dropped
points. So they suddenly put unnecessary pressure on this game upon themselves. So both the managers are aware of this. I think it is going to be a tactical warfare between both the managers.
As a Liverpool fan, I should not be wishing this, but I think we are set for a cracking game, possibly a very dramatic one.
A very dramatic, very cracking game. But I think Chelsea have the edge simply because they are better defenders. It's simply because of that. On offense, I think it's equal almost. It's up there. Both the teams are good because Chelsea have a good spine. But Chelsea, simply because of Kante and the defensive line behind Kante, I think Chelsea have the edge because Liverpool will struggle in defence, especially if Hazard and Morata are on top form like they were against West Bromwich Albion, because that's Liverpool's problem.
So we might end up getting something like the famous 2009 Champions League semi-final second leg.
I wouldn't rule it out. Two excitable managers jumping about on the sidelines, players, it's going to be chaos, it's going to be fun. And as a neutral, I'm going to soak it all in.
And incidentally, like Michael Davis mentioned on their podcast Many Places the other time, that these are both Rafael Benitez's former lovers.
Yes.
Two teams clashing against each other. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll of course bring you the post-mortem of that game and the rest of the league. And soon enough, with our European correspondent, that is Karan, hopefully he's recovered from the heartbreak as well. We will bring you a round over the Champions League once that is over. And of course, we eagerly await, Vishal.
Yep.
The World Cup draw,
despite
whatever has happened.
Oh yes. I'm completely neutral to this World Cup. That whoever wants can come win this. Go for it.
But nonetheless, we will talk about it like we promised.
Yep.
In the meantime, you can look us up on Twitter at SenseSoccer. Otherwise, you can subscribe to us on Pocket Cast, on iTunes, look for Soccer Sense, or visit our channel on Audio Boom. It's audioboom.com/soccer-sense. You can find all our episodes there. And that's that for this weekend.
Yep.
Just a reminder again that since we interviewed Brighton Hove Albion, they have remained unbeaten in the league.
That stops this weekend.
In the meantime, this is Tariq signing off along with Vishal.
Pray for United, a little bit for Italy.
See you guys next time.